Hello and welcome to a TMCNet podcast. My name is Rich Tarani, and I am the president and group editor-in-chief of TMC and TMCNet, and it is a beautiful Monday today in Connecticut, September 29th, and we've got a guest with a tremendous amount of knowledge of the communication space today, and I'm very excited to introduce him. It's Neil Schacht, who's the CEO of Communitech Services. Neil, how are you?
I'm great, and it's not as nice a day here, but we had great weather here on Saturday.
So for those callers who aren't familiar with where you're located, give us a little info on where you are.
We're in the Chicago suburbs. We're actually located in Arlington Heights, which is a suburb just outside the airport.
Excellent. So we're going to talk today about the hidden dangers of unified communications, and it's definitely a topic which I know you know a lot about. You've been in a telecom space since the 80s. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say actually since 1979. So.
Wow. Wow! That's a good amount of time, and you've done a lot. You've seen a lot. I know that you were one of the first people to realize that voice over IP was going to be a big game changer, and you got involved in that market early. And I remember you talking to me about it in the 90s, and now here we are with UC, and you've got an interesting take on some of the hidden dangers, and I'd love to discuss those with you. So, if you can give me a little overview on what do you think some of the hidden dangers are, I'm sure our listeners would love to know.
Well, Rich, it's sort of ironic because, you know, we wear a double hat. The products we work with and we sell are based in this space. But just as what happened with VoIP, what happens is the hype reaps such a huge level, you know, that people start making all kinds of promises about what the technology could do, and then their experience is the reality falls far short, and then people become skeptical. So, you know, I think it's always useful to take sort of a balanced perspective and see what's real and what isn't. And, you know, what we see going on in unified communications now is, people building these roadmaps and trying to create the perception that they can give you everything that you would possibly need. And if you just buy into the family of products, and really it's at a very sophisticated level, people are spending a huge amount of money to do a vendor lock-in at unprecedented levels. And you know, we think this is extremely dangerous to do because, you know, the direction of unified communications is unfolding. And you can't possibly know what's going to happen 3, 4, 5 years out from now. Do you want me to elaborate some?
Oh, please do.
Sure. So, you know, one of the markets that we serve is the university market. And, you know, so one of the things that the universities have done, because they've been hearing all this hype about unified communications, is they go out and they survey their users. And do you know what the number one response is they get from their users?
No.
The runner response is they have absolutely no idea what that means or what they should be doing.
Interesting.
And you know, there's that old quote from Henry Ford that says if he asked his customers what they wanted, they'd say that they wanted a faster horse. So how do you survey users about what they want in the future when they don't know what the future holds? So one of the things that we talk to customers a lot about is forming their own unified communications roadmap and stressing the importance that it should be their own roadmap and not their vendor's roadmap. So, of course, they immediately say, well, what does that mean? And, you know, as a general guidance, you know, it means thinking about where you want to see your business, your enterprise go and how you're going to get there. And so the starting point is to try to figure out, you know, what you're trying to do. So when we talk about the dangers, I've sort of divided up the dangers into two categories. One is the stuff that you can't predict, and the other stuff are factors that are in front of you, but you don't understand what the ramifications of them are going to be. So, you know, there's a very popular book that was on the New York Times bestseller list called The Black Swan, And it was the black swan, the impact of the highly improbable. So, you know, what are things like that? 9/11, social networking, virtual worlds. Why are these highly improbable? Well, you know, I mean, there are some people who claim you could have predicted 9/11 happening, but, you know, most of us couldn't, right? So what happens when you have, you know, this, you know, some sort of dramatic change? And so what that's ushered in is a wave of people doing all kinds of disaster planning. And, you know, should you have multiple data centers? And should you have one data center? Or should it be a hardened infrastructure? So now people are planning for something that is really unlikely to happen, but they're spending money planning it. Meanwhile, on technology, we know all kinds of stuff that's going to happen. I mean, we know that, you know, it's becoming more software-based, but what does that mean? I mean, do you see telecom vendors adding software engineers to their sales staff? No, of course not. So we're making the effort to plan for highly improbable events, yet the probable events we're not even staffing for.
Right.
Social networking. I mean, is there anybody who could deny that social networking is one of the biggest phenomena and has the largest impact on, pick your age group, 15 to 25-year-olds? I mean, Facebook, MySpace. And, you know, these are technologies that younger people or early adopters, of course, you and I are on Facebook, Rich, and like everybody else our age, we have it because we think we should have it, but none of us really know what to do with it. We don't really send each other messages, right?
I would like to be able to disagree with you, but I think time is one of my factors, one of the factors that keeps me from using social networking tools as much as I probably could or should.
So when you think about social networking, in theory, if we were younger and had more time, you know, the goal there is to connect individuals and to share content and share videos and to share lives and to share IM and to share text messaging and to share photos and to share blogs and to share presence and, you know, be a part of a virtual community. And, you know, you and I are linked together through LinkedIn and Facebook. And you know what? To people who are 15 to 25, that's unified communications. And it's cool. And, you know, can you think of a single vendor that's integrated and part of their unified communication story is talking about how they have Facebook integration? Of course not. That's not what Cisco and Microsoft want to hear. They want to hear how they supplied it all. Not only that, you know, Rich, I know you're not as old as I am, but you know what? The tools that we use are boring. I mean, you know, we use Microsoft tools, right? And those of us that consider ourselves to be a little bit more cutting edge, not me because I'm not that cool, but, you know, maybe we use, instead of using Explorer as a browser, we use, you know, something from Apple, or we use Firefox or something. But kids use different types of interfaces that we do. And those kids are coming into the marketplace. And more importantly, those kids are the guys who are the IT guys, and they're the early adopters into driving technology. And our tools are, I mean, the tools that vendors are coming out for with these grandiose views of unified communications really don't take that kind of independent millennial, you know, that whole age group they call millennials. It doesn't take that whole thinking into account. So we haven't really planned for that very well. And then sort of the last thing under these highly improbable events is the growth of virtual world. And you and I talked about that a little bit earlier in the pre-conversation. And those are things like Second Life. And, you know, you talk to people in the business community, and it sounds sort of wacky. But, you know, IBM is spending a ton of money in this space. Google just came out with their Lively.com. One of the pictures I show during my presentation is I show this guy in a business suit in front of what looks like the Forbidden City, and it was actually the avatar of IBM CEO's Sam Palmisano, with IBM, you know, really having a series of announcements about a variety of things they're trying to do in that space. And virtual worlds, think of it as, instead of thinking about it as something spacey, as just an avatar, think about it as your cursor in some space and a different set of collaboration tools. And I think the reason why that's important is, you know, people are spending a lot of money on this whole telepresence sort of craze. But when you think about it, all of that stuff is based on sort of a fundamental mistruth. And the mistruth is it's as good as being there, and it's going to stop all business travel. And certainly telepresence has its place for a certain type of collaboration. But it's not a substitute for being there. It's not a substitute for relationships. And certainly more people are going to do audio conferencing because it's easy to set up and take down. And what virtual worlds do, without spending the whole talk on virtual world, is it's the ability to very easily shift from a phone call or an IM into a more collaborative space and back again without requiring all kinds of very expensive, heavy investment. And, you know, going to a separate room and having a $300,000 setup and, you know, special people involved. And, again, you know, this sort of is one of the things that sort of gives rise to people, you know, being sort of suspicious about unified communications, because they keep hearing these tools are like being there, but they're not, and we all know that. So, you know, let's call a spade a spade. You know, the goal of all these technologies, if you want effective communications, is to provide something you can't get in real life, not to duplicate real life and claim it's just as good.
Right.
Well, right. I mean, there are tricks that you can do with technology. For example, you know, if you were on a conference call right now, and there were three of us, you could be IMing me and telling me to be quiet. So in real life, I couldn't be that discreet with the three of us. So that's just a sort of a minor example where technology can provide something better than real life.
So your point is that these tools actually will allow us to do and interact in ways that we cannot interact in the real world. So it's really the virtual world actually is an additive force. It allows us not only to communicate in ways which are unlike real world, where we have 3D avatars that can do things like fly and move in directions that humans can and instantaneously change appearance. But in addition, we can now, the more other things you can do are beam. And that was a comment that I heard someone say at a Nortel blogger day that we had up in Canada, where the concept of having a 3D avatar is almost now the virtual equivalent of being able to be beamed from location to location, if you were to use a Star Trek term, where a person could be in Europe and then instantaneously transform or transfer their virtual presence to another place. So we not only can do those kinds of interesting things, but we also can interact in ways that we don't feel comfortable interacting in the spoken or in the physical world.
Yeah, and there's signs of it all around us, and they're hodgepodge at this level. Right. So one of the things that I really love about my Outlook files, the way I have them organized, is if I'm talking to you, you know, I can, while I'm talking to you, I could type in the company name and, you know, I could look up. And, you know, for people like yourself that are so impressive, Rich, I keep all my biographical notes in their Outlook files, and I could look them up while I'm talking to you, and I could use them as memory joggers. So it's really combining a variety of pieces together. And that is better than reality for certain purposes. So, again, unified communications, it's lots of pieces being glued together in ways to enhance communications. But who could predict that up front? Now, the other area that I mentioned was what are the facts that are in front of us, but we really don't know what to make of them? So, I mean, to me, one of the huge issues is privacy concerns. So, you know, in the early days of VoIP, we were all worried about Kalia, which was, you know, the ability basically to wiretap off of VoIP stuff. Now you have all kinds of companies saying they're going to provide hosted unified communications. So what does that mean? And what does that mean for security and privacy? I mean, does that mean if you had it on a hosted basis, that somebody is going to have access not just to be able to listen and monitor your conversations, but all of those notes that I just mentioned that maybe I store in your Outlook file, you know, where I say Rich Tarani and I have your title and maybe a couple of notes about, you know, your family or something, all of that's going to be acceptable, plus, you know, the email stream, the IM stream. You know, the people, a lot of the people I know, including my wife, that are software engineers, have profound concerns about, you know, the Internet and confidentiality of information. And, you know, a lot of people with computer science backgrounds, probably a higher degree of people with computer science backgrounds, refuse to keep credit card information on their profiles and web accounts because they're worried about them being cracked. I just had Citibank reissue a credit card to me 3 weeks ago saying that some merchants' files have been compromised and they reissued credit cards. So when you unify communications and you consolidate it, who owns it? How do you safeguard it? How is it protected? Now, people that are out there promoting that they have the total solution and just buy into what they're doing, they're not thinking about these issues. And in fact, you and I are not thinking about these issues yet either, but we will be. And
so if I could summarize, your point is that the kids today are utilizing unified communications, the true unified communications, and they're doing the things that are interesting and sexy and social networking combined with things like virtual worlds and other sorts of web interactions while truly sharing their and you didn't even mention Twittering, which is a whole other issue.
Right.
People getting to the granular level where I'm going to Starbucks, I'm in line, I'm fifth in line, third in line, got my latte, it's hotter than usual, I'm sitting down, I'm now working in Starbucks, I'm leaving. Things that our generation might consider, I don't want to say the word crazy or silly, but those are the only words that come to mind. And that's the true unified communications, and so the office unified communications, so the things that we see at trade shows, like our internet telephony show last week, is almost a generation behind the true unified communications. Is that where you're going?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of what's going on with convergence, is the blend of consumer electronics and consumer technologies. Look, I mean, kids have been doing IM and text messaging for years before it was available on an office basis, right?
Yes.
And
a lot of offices don't even have it still, so that's a...
Right, right.
You're absolutely right.
Presence. I mean, you know, I think those of us in the VoIP world, we're looking at VoIP, presence being the silver bullet. But, you know, to a lot of people, certainly a surge age group, it's what their kids do. So how can you come up with a master plan now? And the answer is you can't. You just can't. So... you know, whether it's presence and IM, and I don't want to repeat all the technologies that people throw about when they talk about unified communications. But the one thing, to me, the bottom line is what you got to plan on is the stuff that you can't plan for.
And how does one do that?
Well, it means you have to make sure the stuff that you buy and the companies you buy from are really committed to making those technologies open. And they're fostering the kind of environment where if you want to buy from their competitor, that they're going to commit to making that stuff work with their competitors. And until there is an outcry for that kind of stuff, unified communications is going to be held back. And because no one company could make it all, and no one company could make best of breed of all pieces. Now, you could make the argument that this sort of goes back to the old debate between having a PC and a Mac, where the PC lets you do just about everything, and the Mac is more controlled, and has a similar user feel. But still, at the end of the day, you know, Apple's built an operating system that's based on Unix, and it is opening up again. You know, it's sort of a bad analogy because there are a lot of exceptions to it. But this technology is going to go through an enormous amount of gyrations in the next 5 years, and you could not have predicted the explosion of interest in Facebook or YouTube. And so, who knows what's next? You know, I don't have a 15-year-old, so I don't have anything I could look around to see what's coming, like the 15-year-olds. But I think if you really want to know the direction of unified communications, you know, sit down and interview a bunch of 15 to 20-year-olds and see what they're doing.
So the point is that you have to be careful when you deploy so as not to get locked into a single vendor's definition of unified communications. And so your definition of unified communications is the combination and the integration of numerous technologies which have caught fire with the business community's general inability to predict which of these would have been popular just 3 or 4 years ago when, let's say, the preliminary budgeting process may have even started or the planning process. So we're almost talking about the convergence of Web 2.0 and mashups with our office communication so that we were able to quickly integrate some of these new web services into solutions. So the theoretical ideal framework for unified communications is one where we can literally drag and drop applications and services into our existing infrastructure in a way that allows us to leverage state-of-the-art technology so that we can be as productive as possible while interacting with some of the world's most powerful tools. So in theory, if I have a unified communication system, let's say I deployed a couple of years ago and Second Life started to achieve critical mass and I wanted to integrate Second Life, I would be able to theoretically add some sort of API or some sort of object-oriented interface into my solution, my UC solution, and instantaneously have avatars integrated with my presence so that I now would even have different sorts of presence where instead of seeing that you're online, I could actually say that you're online and you're on the continent of, let's say, Africa, or you're in Europe, or you're in Asia, or you're even in different parts within Second Life, or let's say an island or whatever other areas of Second Life that you happen to frequent. So is that kind of where you're going with all this, if I was to put the theoretical into the practical?
I wish I said it as well as you did, yes.
Oh, you're such a flatterer. You'll be invited back to so many more podcasts. Now that's a way to do it. No to other people who want to be on my podcast.
Yeah, no, you got it. You got it exactly. I don't even know what I could say. That is my thoughts exactly, and it's happening. And the forces behind this are overwhelming. You know, the people who are doing things this way are the early adopters, and they're the young people coming into the workplace saying, "Why can't I have the same tools I have at home?" And you know, I'm 54. The front end, I'm sort of the bottom half of the middle of the baby boomers, and the front end is beginning to retire. And you know what? There's all kinds of issues about replacing people in the job market, but the people coming in that are really talented are going to be highly sought after, and they're going to want to have the tools, and they're not going to want to feel they're locked into something from the last, from old fart technology.
And it's very interesting that you're talking like this, because I at IT Expo last week in LA, I came across a lot of the bloggers that I interact with virtually, and you know, I get to see them from time to time at events, and one of the things that I talk with them about is just the vast chasm between what's interesting to bloggers and what's interesting to people that actually sign checks to buy things. and it's becoming wider than ever. Like, for example, the bloggers don't write about companies like Avaya that often because they're not on the leading edge doing the leading edge things. They're not one of the companies that's like a Web 2.0 mashup company, and that's all they do. And they're just out of incubation a year ago. I mean, you know, Avaya's been around. If you go back to Lucent AT&T days, I mean, the company's been around for many, many decades. But if you are an enterprise or an SMB looking to buy something today, you're going to put Avaya at the top of your list of companies to look at to provide you a solution because they're a name brand that is extremely strong, and you know that they're going to be around for the long term. And so you have this chasm between the kinds of things that people sign checks to buy and the kinds of things that the bloggers are interested to write about. And so your point is that there is going to be, or there needs to be, a merger between the traditional companies in communications and technology and the next-gen technologies, and maybe some sort of framework or infrastructure that allows the easy combining of these vastly different worlds.
Yeah, you know, Rich, you know, in a certain respect, bloggers are out of touch as well. And I almost hesitate to even say that because so many of them are close friends of mine. But, you know, bloggers are like film critics. You know, they see the same old all the time. And so what's interesting is what's new and different. Although, you know, if you watch film critics, some of the movies they recommend, you know, they're so new and different you don't like them. And by that I mean what a corporate buyer wants. You know, I have some friends who are analysts. They always say to me, Neil, what are your customers telling you? What do they really want? What motivates them? And I always tell them the same thing. Not getting fired, that's what motivates them.
That's great.
And, you know, a lot of the emerging technologies aren't ready for prime time. I mean, they're okay if a blogger's using them once in a while. And you, Rich, you know the bloggers like I do. You know, these are extremely smart people, extremely technically adept. I mean, their technical skills are vastly above that of an average office worker. So you're right, though. It has to meet somewhere in the middle. And, you know, Avaya is a great company, and what Avaya is good at doing is delivering something that works and keeping it working. And so how do you meet all needs? Well, it does have to meet somewhere in the middle. That's exactly right. And what a company like Avaya or Nortel or Mitel, what these companies need to hear is from customers saying, hey, I want your stuff because it works, but I want you to create it in a way that I can add other technologies, and I don't want you to be territorial, and I don't want you to just say, hey, join our Avaya Eco community or our Cisco user group community, and as long as you buy into our dictates, you know, you could be part of our ecosphere. I mean, go back to your vendors and say, keep it open, give me choices, be a partner. Don't dictate and don't make my choices for them. We want this to be collaborative, and it's not the same old business model anymore.
Right, and so I guess that's one of the reasons why, I mean, not to harp on Avaya, but they were at the show last week, and they were also part of the communications developer event where they have their DevConnect group, which is literally opening up the communications infrastructure to some of these new technologies. And so they've got, I forget the number, but probably somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 DevConnect partners at this point. And these are the companies that are working with Avaya and adding value to the system. So maybe in Avaya's case, that's the solution that they think is going to help them bridge this gap. And so maybe it seems that that is the kind of thing that all communications vendors need to embrace. And even British Telecom, with their acquisition of Ribbit, is signaling to the market that they understand that they need to be able to open up their infrastructure and allow others to add value. And one of the things that you'll hear from the podcast I had recently with Thomas Howe is that telephony is becoming the, I'm trying to remember the exact way he said it, was it the condiment of the world or of the technology space, meaning that telephony is going to become the pepper and the salt in the various technologies that we use. And so adding telephony is going to become much easier, and subsequently we're going to see telephony become an enabler in applications and making applications more efficient. And so in the traditional business world, so Thomas Howe calls these kinds of things voice mashups, and that's a common term that you'll hear from him and from kind of the leading edge blogger world, but then you'll hear from some of the traditional telecom companies, they'll call it communications-enabled business processes, and subsequently those are the kinds of things that take a factory floor application where there is some problem on the factory floor, and instantaneously phone calls will be made to management and other people that are able to either approve or stop the factory from continuing to make a product which may fall below some predetermined threshold, and they are able to make a decision on the fly and instantaneously be contacted at a Nortel user group meeting down in Texas. I think it was the ISLUA show, I believe that's what it's called. I may be dating myself because that may be the older term. I think it has a new term now, but just in case, I'm gonna Google it while we're talking just to see what the new name is.
You couldn't do that live.
So at this event that I was at, I think it is still called the ISLUA. The interesting thing that happened at that event was we saw demos, and we actually got to hear I believe it was a doctor surgeon who was also technically oriented explain to us how Nortel put in communications-enabled business processes in the hospital and enabled a massive productivity boost, because a number of doctors need to be consulted before somebody checks out of a hospital, and it used to take a long time to get a hold of all the doctors, and in fact, nurses would quite often not want to deal with the problem of getting a hold of all the doctors, so they would actually let patients stay in the hospital until the next shift. And a little-known fact is that a hospital bed costs anywhere from $1 to $2 million, and subsequently, the efficiency of even a 10% increase in the efficiency of getting people out of the hospital, of course we're talking about healthy people, out of the hospital is a massive cost savings, especially when you consider that while you're in the hospital, medications continue to come, linens continue to be changed, and all sorts of food continues to be served. And so there's just a tremendous cost and a tremendous savings by getting CEBP inside of that sort of organization. So I'm wondering if we're not closer than we think, but at the same time we're using different terminology.
Well, part of that gap, I just wrote an article that went online on the UC Strategies website, and I was sort of talking about, you know, where the gaps are in this CEBP process and things, and you know, unfortunately, those are still exceptions and not the rule, and that's because if you look in the ranks of vendors, you know, how many people have MBAs that are skilled at analyzing business problems? How many have software engineers that are used to, you know, being able to deliver a custom solution? How many people have certified project managers that are experienced in coordinating like a gazillion people, many of whom aren't on your payroll? You know, in order to deploy these kinds of solutions, you need different types of staff. I mean, you could always count on consultants, and you could always count on vendors pro services. But you know, there's an acute shortage of these skill sets at being able to diagnose these problems and integrate all these solutions together. But we could save that for another day's conversation.
Yeah, and this has been great, and I know that we're probably running out of time here. And before you go, it would be fantastic if you could explain a little bit more about your company for those people that are fascinated by what you're saying and are dying to know how they might be able to work with you in more detail.
Well, my company is Communitech Services, and we specialize in high-end unified messaging and unified communication solutions for large enterprises.
Talking about dating, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but dating yourself, you just that term, unified messaging, wow, that takes me back a decade and a half. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Continue.
Hey, you said you were a publisher, too, and I think of Gutenberg Bible, so.
Touché. So please continue. So high-end UC and unified messaging.
So we specialize in very high-end voicemail systems that integrate with email and integrate with presence and are designed to work with these other technologies in the enterprise. And we do that for a variety of partners. I'm not allowed to publicly quote who they are, but some of them are the largest companies in the world in telecommunications. And we work with them, with some of their, most significant customers. And, it's hard to make these systems work. I'd love to tell you it's a piece of cake. It's not. These are complex environments, with customers' unique data centers and unique security requirements, disaster recovery plans. But we work with them to deploy these systems and to maintain them and keep them running because, again, what motivates my customers is not getting fired.
And that's fascinating because, we rarely talk about that kind of thing in terms of just what the common buyer, what their instincts are. What was it exactly you said? I mean, that's what they're looking to do. They're just looking to not get fired, right? That was the words you said?
Yeah, I mean, they want great technology, but they want it to work. They want it to be reliable. They're overworked. They're overworked. They're understaffed, and they want to serve the needs of their organizations. And they got to find people they feel comfortable working with, and that they can trust and won't let them down. And that's our job. We want to be that person.
That's great, Neil. You've been listening to Neil Schacht, who is the CEO of Communitech Services, and we've talked all about the hidden dangers of unified communications as well as the chasm between the youth and those of us. I don't want to call us the old people. What's the season, the experience? What are we, Neil?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, that just shows you we are old because our neurons are not firing the way they used to maybe 20, 30 years ago. So the chasm between the people in the workplace and the people entering the workplace and how unified communications is being viewed from depending on the different perspective that you have and how in the future these worlds will have to come together. And the question, of course, is how will we get there? And I think, Neil, this was an excellent beginning for multiple conversations and articles that we'll be having on TMCNet and hopefully you'll be involved in going forward.
Well, thank you. I've had a valuable relationship with TMC for, I'm almost embarrassed to say, 25 plus years, and it's been a great relationship, and you guys do a great job for the industry, and I'm glad to have you as a personal friend as well.
Thank you so much, Neil. Likewise, it's amazing when you sit down and realize that we've been doing this for so long and we've seen so much change, and I can't wait to see what the next 25 years are going to hold. And as a reminder, this is a TMCNet podcast. My name is Rich Tarani, the president and the group editor-in-chief here of TMC. So thank you, everyone, and I really hope you enjoyed this podcast, and goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.